How to apply to medical school. Welcome to the 160th episode of Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get to that delightful instant when you can high-five the person next to you and shout, "Yes, I'm in." We're now neck-deep in the medical school application season. Some applicants have submitted their primary application and are waiting for secondaries to rain down upon them like a summer cloudburst. Others are feverishly working on their primary applications, trying to wrestle their life story into the boxes and character limits allotted by MCAS, ACOMAS, and others. For insight and advice to help you through the grueling medical school application process, I've invited Sydney Foote to join me. Sid has a background in healthcare education administration at both the University of Washington Medical and Dental Schools, where she served on several fellowship admissions committees, as well as years of experience in writing and marketing for various businesses. And it's that combination of persuasive writing and medical school admissions experience that she has drawn on since she joined Accepted in 2001 and became a medical school admissions consultant extraordinaire. We're also going to draw on those parallel strengths today in this show. Sid, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Thanks very much, Linda.
I'm delighted to be speaking with you today. Let's talk first about Joe and Jane, med school applicant. They are either about to start their senior year of college or have already graduated. They have an MCAT score and a GPA. They have volunteered, maybe shadowed, participated in some kind of clinical setting. They want to go to medical school. How do you recommend they select the schools to apply to? Can you give a few key considerations for them?
Sure. A lot of this really depends on time and money, because not only are the applications expensive, but there's also a very big time commitment in sending out all the secondary essays and all the applications that you would need. So you really want to try to be smart and look realistically at your chances. So when I'm advising applicants, you know, I first of all try to figure out how many they think they can reasonably do in a season. And usually the answer is somewhere between 15 and 30. I talked to someone who did 80 last year, which is just insane.
Did he get in?
No, it wasn't someone I worked with.
Oh,
I had to reapply.
Oh, gosh.
So, you know, there is probably a trade-off there when you're working on so many that you don't have time to commit to them. So you want to be very realistic about your time and the effort that you can put into it. So what I like to do, first of all, is obviously look at the state schools. Those are the ones where you probably have a better chance than normal. A lot of the rates of acceptance for state schools are higher, especially for people, you know,
in-state.
Yeah. The second thing I do is I look at the quantitative numbers. The MSAR will report the highs and lows of the GPAs and the MCAT scores, and I don't recommend that you ever go below the lows on those. But if you're near the average, even a few points under, then that's possibly a good school for you. The other thing that you want to look at, though, is acceptance rates, because sometimes some of the schools that have lower quantitative numbers will be very, very competitive. Like, I've just blanked out on some examples here, but there are a lot of them that are, there's a trade-off with how many people see it and think, oh, this would be an easy place to get in, but the acceptance rates are very low.
Right.
So you want to look at that as well. Beyond that, it really comes down to researching and knowing the programs. You know, what are you looking for? Do you want to go somewhere that's very research heavy? Do you want to go somewhere that focuses on more patient-centered medicine, like the Georgetown or Creighton and that cura personalis idea of, you know, caring for the whole person? Do you want to incorporate some arts focus like you'd have at Columbia or Harvard?
Right.
You really need to look to each individual program to be able to see what their strengths are and how you can show your fit with those. So that's basically a long answer, but
no, I think it's a complex decision. It's not just a matter of looking at rankings. It's not just a matter of looking at the numbers. There are multiple elements to it. There is cost, there is your qualifications, and then there's fit with the, you know, with what you want to do and what the program's going to emphasize. So,
yeah, and I think that research that you do at this point of finding out what schools you want to apply to is only going to help you down the line when you're answering their secondaries and hopefully eventually going for interviews, because that is all critical information you will need.
Right. So I guess the applicants should really also organize this information in some way so that it's readily accessible to them when they are responding to secondaries and then the hope for interviews also, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. I would recommend keeping notes and spreadsheets and, you know,
something like Evernote or, like you say, spreadsheet.
Yep, some way that you can access that information and what interested you about the school. One last thing I didn't mention is talk to people who you know. If you are shadowing with doctors, find out where they went to medical school. Find out what they liked about it. If that's somewhere that is accessible to you, you know, if you're in that range, that's always something good to mention down the line, that you worked with so-and-so who's an alumni of the program. So use your personal connections in research or shadowing or clinical work, and just try to make those really personal connections to each program that you're interested in.
That's a great idea. Now, for those medical school applicants that are right now working on their MCAS application, there are some that have already submitted it as we speak. There are some that are still working on it, and there's some that will be working on it in the very near future. How do you suggest they decide which experiences go into the personal statement as opposed to the most meaningful experiences? How should they distinguish between those two elements in the application? I think that's something I really struggle with a lot.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing with that is I always prefer working on the personal statement first, because I think a lot of the work that goes into that, and I shouldn't even call it working on the personal statement, working on your ideas and your stories that you are going to use in your application. So what I advise you do before you start anything else is the work before writing. You figure out what your strengths are, what your challenges have been, what are your stories, and these are the things that you're going to use in every aspect, in every element of your application. So when you start to put together your personal statement versus your experiences section versus your secondaries later on down the line, you really want to strive for some balance. So I like to do things for the meaningful experiences that you want to tell, but that didn't really fit in your personal statement, that show a different aspect of yourself. Everything needs to show why you want to go to medical school or why you would be a qualified applicant for medical school. Mm-hmm. But the story you tell is going to determine where you tell that piece of the puzzle, where you present that piece of the puzzle. So often with the meaningful experiences, I will have people talk more in detail about a hobby that they're interested in or some social aspect of their life, a leadership activity that they didn't have in their personal statement, perhaps more in-depth information about research, if that's a big part of the profile, because you don't want to really go into a lot of details of that in your personal statement. So you really have to look at this whole thing as a ladder where each section is leading you to the next, and there's no specific place where you can put, you know, one story versus another story. You could do it in many different ways, and everybody does it in a different way, but it just really needs to be consistent and overall present a picture of you as a very qualified applicant.
I like to compare it to a jigsaw puzzle, and I like the fact that you just said you got to present a picture of you, because every piece is contributing to that, and they have to fit together. You don't want a lot of overlap, and they certainly shouldn't be disjointed or complete different pictures.
I always tell people to reinforce rather than repeat. So you don't want to use the same stories, or if you do, you want to use a different aspect of them. So overall, it needs to be balanced. It needs to be the whole puzzle. You can't have just the outside of the puzzle, you know?
Right. I was actually just working with one of my grandchildren on some jigsaw puzzles, and this little guy just did not get the concept of the outside of the puzzle first. For him, it was all about the different things in the puzzle. But in the end of the day, whatever approach you're going to take, the picture at the end has to be a cohesive whole. And I think that's really the message.
I think that's a really good analogy for it. I also think the ladder analogy is very appropriate, because each thing that you do with your application is like a rung. You're trying to get to the next step. So with mm-hmm. your primary application, you're trying to move to the secondaries, and if they're screened, you know, hopefully you'll
right.
get one.
Right.
Then you're moving to the interview. Then you're moving, you know, into the accepted or the waitlist pile. So each step, you're getting closer and closer and closer. So you need to keep giving. You can't throw everything in at the beginning.
Right.
It all needs to build.
Do you ever recommend that people save stories, or is it like put your best stuff in
Absolutely.
the MCAS? Okay.
What I like to do is have people write a lot more than they need to for their primary essay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as I'm editing it, I will pull out pieces and go, save this for your secondary. You know, I mean, a lot of times people will have an almost complete story there in their primary that's going to make a perfect secondary essay, but it doesn't really fit in the primary. So,
right.
you know, yeah, definitely save stories. You can't put everything in the beginning.
Of course not. Now, any tips for the personal statement specifically, where you have a little bit more room?
Yeah, so with the personal statement, like I said, you need to do a lot of work before you actually sit down to write it.
Mm-hmm.
You need to, I think the blank page scares people. But if you've done thinking and scribbling down like different stories that you have, different things that you might want to include, then you can often weave those together in ways that will make sense, or that at least will give you a start where you're not intimidated by that blank page. So that's my first tip. The second tip is really, I just said it, you can't include it all. So pick a certain number of things that you want to tell them about, some impression of medicine that you've had, and how that has informed you, and how that has, what experiences, what actions you've taken because of it. That's one very common way that people do it, and they go through a number of experiences, whether clinical or research or volunteer activities, but do it in a way where it all, I don't want to say where it all just relates to medicine. You can have some very different things, you know, whether it's weightlifting or whether it's, you know, ballet or whatever your interest may have been, music.
Right.
But it's being able to show a link to how that brought you into this profession that's, you know, that demands for compassion and expression and understanding and those kind of things. And if you can bring in those different ideas into a theme that will let you put, will give you the structure to enter your clinical experiences and your research experiences, then that's a perfect essay, in my opinion.
That's true. It was actually quite interesting. We had a podcast, I'm looking it up as we're talking, very recently with a professor at Temple Medical School and another professor who teaches both at Temple Medical School and their post-bac program. And they were both emphasizing just the incredible importance of communications right now in medical work. Obviously, there's mm-hmm. work dealing with patients, but there's also dealing with your team members on a medical team.
Yeah.
So all that it's become so, so, so important in the medical field that the ability to show communications and the ability to work in teams is weighed very heavily in the medical school admissions process. And that can be shown with, like you said, you know, if you played in a band, if you were active on a sports team, in all kinds of non-clinical, non-academic settings, you can be showing qualities that are absolutely critical for success in medicine.
Yeah, and I think that's something that the medical schools have made really clear. They don't want people who have just been single-minded, you know, just focused on medicine through their entire lives. I've worked with people who have wonderful, wonderful scores, and you would think they would be competitive anywhere, but their personality just doesn't translate well in the interview stage. They don't come across as compassionate enough, or they don't come across as having outside interests, or that level of maturity and personal connection is, I think, really what it is, that life experience. And these other activities, you know, like you were saying, in a band or on a sports team or even a professional career before you turn to medicine, can all give you ways to relate to other people in a way that just being focused on the sciences does not.
Right.
So that's really important, that be well-rounded.
Okay. Do you have any tips on writing succinctly enough to maximize the most meaningful experience and then even the even more challenging 700-character activity descriptions?
Yeah, these can be really tough.
Oh, yeah.
With 700 characters, a lot of people really try to stick to just the description that you put in a CV, and that's not going to work. You need to go beyond that. Show the impact you had or why they're important in your development, what you've learned. It's very important that you just don't say, I did this. Writing more than is necessary at first is, again, I think, the best way to do it, because it's much easier to cut things back than it is to go in and keep trying to add things.
It's true.
So if you are writing about, you know, just a summer job that you had that's not a meaningful experience, but write down about a time that you were challenged. Write down about a time when, you know, you had a horrible customer that you couldn't deal with and, you know, you had to calm him down and no one else would talk to him. These kind of conflicts and things like that can really show your ability to manage conflict in difficult situations, your grace under pressure, really. So if you have those stories and then you're cutting them down, it's much easier to change your writing from passive to active, which always makes it shorter, to really dig down into the real key elements of it, and to go beyond just that basic, you know, I worked in at the Gap for a summer.
Right. No, even in a CV, by the way, I think that applicants should focus much more on achievements and results and outcomes than on descriptions of responsibilities. But certainly here, you really have to. Now, let's move on to the next phase, all right? I realize that right now, secondaries, as we speak, have not come out, but they're going to be coming out very, very, very soon. And certainly people can be listening to this podcast when they're already out. So if an applicant has submitted their MCAS and they're getting secondary applications, how do secondary applications differ from primary applications? I think that's my basic question.
The secondaries are really so the school can see the fit.
Yeah.
Does this person work at our program? Most of them are more directed, and most of the questions will reveal a lot more about the school's focus, you know, whether it's research or being more patient-centered or more community-based. That's really student who's done their research about the school will shine, because you'll be able to present yourself in a way that, you know, shows you'll really fit in well there. So that's the biggest difference at the primary. The primary is, you know, that one-size-fits-all thing that goes out to everybody. But the secondaries, you really need to know who you're writing for.
Right. Okay. And again, kind of going back where I started going in my last question, for those who have submitted the MCAS and they haven't yet received secondaries, so they're kind of in a little bit of a limbo, do you recommend pre-writing secondaries based on last year's prompts? And obviously some secondaries are now automatic, so you can be pretty confident you're going to get them. Some are screened, so you may not be quite as confident, but how do you recommend people handle this interim phase? And again, I mean, once you start getting secondaries, it's a deluge, so.
Absolutely. You want to try to get ahead of the game if you can. I wrote a blog recently about a client who I worked with last year who started his secondaries in, I believe, in May, and he was finished by mid-July, end of July, with, like, you know, 25 schools, and he just got so many offers because he, as soon as they came in, he turned them around. He got them off of Student Doctor Network, and the questions mostly did not change. They were very similar with, most of them were very similar if the wording had changed even a little bit. Some of them had some differences, but, you know, he had started early enough that that wasn't a big deal and he could just, you know, roll with it. And even the ones that were different, often he could use that answer for another school. So, yes, I absolutely do recommend people will look at it, will look for these early and start pre-writing. And if you want to just be on the safe side, you can always just start with writing the more frequently asked questions, like the diversity questions, the greatest challenge, these questions that you see over and over and over again throughout the season. And then you can recycle them as you need to through the rest of the year. But yeah, I think starting now, at least getting a head start on some of the ones that you know are going to be will not be screened is a great idea, because once they come out, you need to get them turned around within 2 weeks max. So yeah, don't procrastinate.
All right. I'm going to include in the show notes a link to our school-specific meds secondary essay tips, which I think will be of tremendous help to you for anybody who does want to pre-write or simply respond effectively to secondary essay questions. How much time should applicants budget for the secondaries? And I acknowledge that some schools basically just want a check, which will take very little time to fill out. And some we're going to want longer essays or lots of short answers or something along those lines. What do you, how, I know you said that they should respond in 2 weeks, but what other advice can you give in terms of budgeting time?
This is where I think pre-writing is really important. And I'm not just talking about pre-writing on the secondaries. This goes back to those stories that I said you need to create before you do your personal statement. Having this sort of inventory of stories that you can pull out and pop into different situations, whether they be client cases or experiences in your research lab dealing with teamwork or whatever it might be, you need to be able to access those quickly and not spend a lot of time going back and forth with, I don't know which story is going to work in this situation. I have another client who was the opposite of the client who got everything in early last year, who wanted to get his secondary so perfect for his dream school that he didn't submit for 6 weeks. And he kept coming back with little changes, and it was just too long. You've got to get them in more quickly. So in terms of time, like I said, 2 weeks is the maximum. 1 week is the goal. You've pre-written anything, that's great. You can recycle a lot of them, because you will see a lot of them over and over and over. But again, don't procrastinate. That's really the most important thing.
The key. I guess remember that perfect is the enemy of done.
Yes. Yes, okay. It is.
Right. Now, you've been giving great suggestions, advice, really constructive, positive tips for the MCAS, for the primary, the secondary applications. What are some common mistakes, other than the ones you just mentioned, overcorrecting? What are some common mistakes that you see applicants make in the primary and completing the primary and secondary applications?
One thing that I've seen a lot of this year, and I was talking with another of our editors recently about it, is this sort of interesting stories but no link to medicine problem. That, people will have something very interesting that's happened to them, but the connection to why it's important for a medical school admissions committee to know is not there. They may be rambling too much, sort of like when I'm talking. you need to cut out all of these extra words. You need to make it very to the point, because admissions committees are reading quickly and they need to have an impact. So rambling and kind of making them figure out why you want to enter this profession is the worst thing you can do. Another thing, and it's kind of related, is that they'll cram too much in. If you've got four volunteer experiences and 2-3 research jobs, and then you've got a leadership experience you want to throw in, you're going to have an essay that, you need 3 times as much space to write about. So, again, you can't fit it all in, and when you try to do it, you lose the impact. At the end of the essay, the reader will be exhausted, and they won't have any clue, except this person did a whole lot of stuff, but, we don't really know why it's important. So for the primary essay, the key mistakes to avoid are just not taking enough time to get a story clear and concise and structured well and making an impact. Those are the things you want to strive for. So you need to take some extra time, even if it means putting your application in a few more, spending a few more days on it, to get something that will present you in the strongest light.
At the beginning of the interview, we spoke about the importance of communications and how applicants should include something that's not so obviously and clinically related or directly related to research or, something like that. We talked about you know, participating in a sports team or in a music team or something along those lines. If somebody chooses to write about an activity like that, do you think that they have to explicitly state the benefits to them as a future physician or the connection to medicine or something like that?
I think it needs to be clear why it's important. So, yes, what I like to do is if they say someone has been in a dance troupe for years, has been choreographing for the, you know, the University Bhangra team or something like that, and they're both worked out, they did all the practices and stuff, but they also took a leadership role in it. Using that example is wonderful because it shows both that you have the discipline and the strength and that resilience and that I want to say perfectionist impulse, although you don't really say that, but that desire to get something, you know, that you can present to people, that you can be proud of to people. And that's something that's very important, that diligence and that ability, that tenacity is really important for medical studies, as is the link to the teamwork that you have in choreographing, you know, being able to see what people's strengths and weaknesses are, being able to motivate people to make it to practice. You know, those kind of things you can use in saying, you know, this is a very rough way to do it, and I don't recommend using these words, but basically, you know, the experience of Bhangra helped me because when I went to my clinical volunteer position at the ER, I saw the doctors have this, you know, similar teamwork aspects. The way that they motivated the patients to change their behavior in the clinic was, you know, similar to the way that I worked with my dancers. Spotting their strengths and weaknesses is all really important for both working with other people in the medical team and working with your patients. So, yeah, you want to be subtle in doing it, but you definitely want to make that link. I think it's really important. And if you don't, you're asking them to make it for you, and that's not their job, frankly. The reader is not, the admissions committee is too busy to do that, and they won't do it. So don't leave it up to them.
Okay, sounds good to me. Let's talk a little bit. I mean, most of my questions have been really geared to first-time applicants, but of course, a significant percentage of the applicant pool is made up of reapplicants. What advice do you have for them in terms of writing the primary personal statement, the most meaningful experiences, and the secondaries? I mean, I'm going to guess that you don't tell them to repeat what they did the previous time that didn't work. Sometimes they feel that experiences are important, and they've continued to be important. So what advice do you have for reapplicants?
Well, I think that the first thing you need to do in approaching a new application is assess your weaknesses. What went wrong? And be very brutally honest with that. And if you can, get feedback from the schools. And then figure out how to address them. And I feel really bad for people who are on wait lists. I mean, there are people still on wait lists, and it's worse for them in a way because, you know, the people that were rejected early on can go, okay, well, I'm going to reapply next June, and they will start, you know, rebuilding or strengthening their application, whereas people on wait lists want to reapply right away, but haven't really had time to do a lot more. Well, hopefully they've been doing work along the way, but a lot of times there's less focus on that because they're hoping they can still get in. So I think the main thing that you need to do is really figure out what you did wrong and fix it. When you get down to actually writing, you definitely don't reuse your personal statement from the previous year. With just a single click, an admissions committee can see that. And if they see that you just reused it, it makes you look like you don't care.
Right. It also makes you look stagnant.
Yeah, it does. And you really need to focus on new work if possible. Obviously, your older experiences will be still important, but you want to show where you have gotten stronger. Right. You don't come out and just say, I am stronger because in your personal statement, but you know that should always be implied. The best advice I can give you is to apply when you're strongest. And if that means taking an extra year and doing a post-bac program, or taking an extra year and, you know, working in research or working in a clinic or getting, you know, whatever it is that you have to do to address your weakness, then I would highly recommend doing that. Don't give up and, you know, keep your sights on medical school but it's just really important that you don't make the same mistakes again.
Exactly. No, 100%. Anything that you wish I would have asked that you'd like to share with our listeners, with medical school applicants?
The one thing I didn't get to when you were talking about the primary and secondary applications and common mistakes, I was just going to add with secondaries, is that I see a lot of people who miss the prompt. They'll either be recycling something or there'll be a story they want to tell and they'll try to squeeze it in when it doesn't really fit. Mm-hmm. So make sure that you're answering the prompt in the right way.
They're not politicians. They're not politicians on the evening news.
That's right. That's exactly right. You can't just frame the question the way you want it to. So that's a big thing for secondaries, as well as, you know, getting to know the school and what and again, knowing your audience. Beyond that, I think we covered a lot, and I think I speak really quickly because that was very quick. But
I think you're giving some great advice here.
Yeah, I hope it is helpful to people. Medical school is just getting so competitive, and I hear applications are up this year, and it's a brutal process, and a lot of people are, have got a really busy couple of months ahead of them, so I hope this will help them.
Sure it will. Sid, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. We've covered a lot of ground, and I think you've done a fantastic job. So I will link to your bio and to some of the articles you've written for the blog from the show notes at accepted.com/160. Listener, if you would like to work with Sid or simply learn more about her and perhaps read some of the excellent guides and posts that she has written, please visit accepted.com/160. And again, we'll link to Sid's bio as well as to at least a few of the resources that she's authored. Listener, I also want to thank you for tuning into this, our 160th episode. If you found this show helpful, please subscribe in iTunes, Stitcher, or Zune so you don't miss any of the upcoming shows. We have shows on medical school admissions, interviews with admissions directors, current medical students, recent grads, CEOs of related businesses, and test prep gurus. So don't miss out on any of this information. This is Admissions Trade Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.